Hello and welcome to WS Podcast. My name is Wojciech Sarski, I'll be your host for today. And before we begin, I might just remind you, if you feel like this is something worth your while, and if you'd like to share it with the world, then please do. Word of mouth is the best kind of advertisement there is. If you are already listening and watching and have been for some time, and you are not yet a subscriber, please follow, you know, subscribe, whatever your platform allows you to do. And also, if you'd like to support the podcast in any other way, please follow the link below. There are some options there. There is a way of contacting me. And I appreciate all of your emails, all of your comments, and your time. So here we are, third episode of the season. Really excited about this. This one's going to be quite a practical one. We've done two episodes of sort of setting the stage in terms of financial and economics ideals and some maybe basic rules of engagement in some sense. And today we're going to focus on something much more close to your everyday life. So I'll bring up a few ideas from other episodes, but for the most part, we'll be exploring the book called The Four Laws of Financial Prosperity by Blaine Harris and Charles Conrad. Now, also, there is a foreword by Stephen Covey, who you might remember from the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, which I'll link below. And the foreword as well is a really, really valuable one. So it's definitely worth your while, even to read the foreword to maybe get yourself encouraged to explore it. Now, in terms of the book itself, it's quite a small one, quite a thin one. I think I've read it in one or maybe two sittings. I enjoyed it. I think it was a very informative and easy to understand one, and most importantly, it's told in stories. So in many ways it reminds me of The Richest Man in Babylon by George Clason, which I also link below for you. Yet again, because of these books telling the ideas within in a form of a story or anecdotes, I think it's much more appealing and easy to digest for an everyday Joe like myself and probably like yourself as well. So there are four laws of financial prosperity in this book, and also some additional chapters dedicated to some, you know, maybe slightly more complex ideas around finance and personal finance in particular. What we're gonna do, and this time I will spoil the fun in a way, is I'll actually mention all four laws and I'll explore them. So, you know, yet again, still, it's definitely worth your while to read the book after this episode as well, because I will not be touching on all the points on every chapter and all the stories in any chapter. But at the same time, I was thinking as I was preparing the notes and preparing this episode that it's only four laws. We have an hour or slightly below that. Let's see how long the episode will be. And so why wouldn't I give you all these laws straight away and sort of challenge you to put them into practice if you haven't already? Now, if you did listen to the episode called Let's Talk About Money, which premiered, I think, almost 2 years ago now, or one of these episodes about finance-related things, such as the Bitcoin standard, or why you shouldn't buy Bitcoin, and so forth, then you might recognize some of the ideas, and good for you. Maybe you're putting already some of them into practice. If you haven't, then here we are. I hope that by the end of this episode, you'll be able to apply these four laws, and if you apply them over time, consistently, you'll see results. I have no doubt about it because I'm applying all of them, and I've seen my prosperity, that's a good way of putting it, and peace definitely, you know, improve in that regard. So in terms of just like establishing the pace of it, I have a few notes here for you, which are essentially quotes to set the scene. The first one is, the issue really isn't one of how much money you make. It's one of financial peace and prosperity, of reaching a point where money becomes an enabler, not a distractor, from the things that really matter most in your life. And you know, on this front, I think it's kind of like this race versus peace. You know, whether you're struggling to make your ends meet, or you don't have to worry about money and therefore you don't think about it that much. Think about it this way. When you're healthy, you don't really think every day, unless you're really focused on keeping your gratitude journal or whatever, you don't really notice the fact that you're healthy, right? Healthy is your natural state. If you're feeling good, then essentially you're just okay. We're much more negative averse. And so the, you know, as the saying goes, you only realize how much your health was worth when you lose it, right? So you only notice how great it is to feel healthy when you're not feeling that great. And in the same way, I understand that money might not be a solution to all kind of ills, but essentially, definitely, and if you don't agree with this, then, I don't know, check your premises. For whatever reason, I wonder how and why, and please maybe comment on below or email me your reasons. If you think that money isn't the problem when you don't have it, it kind of feels to me that when we don't have enough money to make our ends meet and to sort of at least live up to the standards that we are used to, we suffer. And when we reach the point when we don't have to worry about money as much, and I'm not talking here about this idea of being so extremely rich that you can, you know, just spend on everything all the time, but even just reaching the point of being able to live on the level that you're living without thinking whether or not you'll have enough money next month to cover those costs and next year, for example, you stop thinking about it that much. You know, it's certainly the experience for me. I've been thinking about money for a long time and intensively, because at a not so far in the past situation, I got myself into a bit of a pickle. And I think I even mentioned it on one of the episodes. So I'll want to bring it up again. I think I overcame it. I'm pretty much clear of it now, but only, if anything, I think it was a very worthy lesson for me to appreciate the value of money. And actually, even in the introduction, Stephen Covey encourages the reader to consider giving their kids, for example, when you're given the pocket money, for example. He mentions this idea of giving the kid the pocket money with, let's just bring it up because I'm gonna butcher it. Do the same thing with the children and their $40 allowances, but tell them if they can only account for half of what you give them, when allowance time rolls around again, you will give them only half as much. Their monthly allowances will equal the total of the transactions in their register, not to exceed $40 received at the beginning of the month. Be tough, but not mean. They'll come around. This is about tracking, so I'm sort of a bit spoiling the future, but this idea that money is valuable and it's better to have it than not, unless in whatever, as I said, if for whatever reason you don't believe that to be the case, and please let me know why, let's just agree that it will become a peaceful state for you the moment you don't have to think about it that much. And when you don't have it, that's all you can kind of think about. Same as with health. When you don't have it, you don't think about anything else other than to get healthy. I know, because I've been ill before, and I bet you did too. So, as the quote mentioned, the issue here is not really that much about making more money or being extremely rich or buying that yacht or whatever you want to put in your goals there. Rather, as a baseline, what we aim for and what I would encourage you to aim for regardless of your financial goals is to be at such a level of your income versus expenses or your investments versus expenses that you're not worrying about money all of the time and you can actually enjoy your time rather than worry about it. You know, it's a very different experience if you're going with your wife or with your boyfriend, girlfriend, with your friends out to drink or to eat or to participate in some activity. It's a very different experience if you're counting the money you're spending because you're worried that you're not going to have enough, rather when you're spending it, not thinking about it that much because you know that you have enough. So yeah, choose which one you find more comfortable, you know? So now let's get on to the first law. As I said, Steven sort of jumped the gun there with me as his voiceover. The first law is that of tracking. And the first law quote from Odd Jørn is, if you can't measure it, you can't manage it. And essentially, when performance is measured, performance improves because you receive comparative feedback. We've already talked about this, especially on Let's Talk About Money. And quite frankly, I think you should consider doing so for all the other goals you have. You gotta keep track of your expenses. The easiest way to do it nowadays is with your app on your phone if you're using any sort of banking app. And if you are maybe using cryptocurrency or maybe using a cash or maybe using grains of salt, then maybe you should consider getting yourself a little notebook or a spreadsheet on your computer and doing the same. I challenge you, and this is the first of the four challenges for this week, for this month really, is I challenge you to start tracking your expenses. Every pound, every dollar, every złoty. Not maybe every penny. I understand that you can sort of, for example, I round up my expenses. So like I don't bother writing down every little penny. I just assume that it's rounded up to the you know, sort of full number. But you gotta start tracking it. If you're not tracking your expenses and you want to get better at finance, maybe because you don't have enough of your savings to go on the vacation you'd like, or maybe you feel like you're not actually that great with figuring out what to even start, like how to even start saving because there is nothing left to save with. I've met some people quite recently and heard about, which just scares me really, who are almost my age and have no savings whatsoever, and they don't want to start tracking. One girl particularly was really apprehensive about it, and she just said that she's scared to do it. And it's kind of like, you know, closing your eyes while walking towards a cliff. You're not running away from consequences by pretending that the problem does not exist, right? You are making the problem bigger, if anything, and you're certain to fail if what you do is willfully blind yourself, pretending that that's not the problem. So by tracking, you'll first notice what your money goes on, where your money gets allocated, and secondly, your mind will start thinking and your heart and your soul will probably also sort of chime in. You'll start to appreciate more and understand more what are you actually valuing. Because if your expenses are not tracked, then in many ways, you might not know what you're spending your money on. Maybe the moment you track your expenses, you'll notice that you've been for the past few years paying for that subscription, which you one time subscribed for. You never actually use it, but you just forgot to cancel it. many people fall prey to that, and that's why subscriptions work as a model of business, because it's the most certain, in many ways, way of getting revenue, right? Especially if someone gets isn't too bothered to check or isn't too bothered to cancel. I paid at least a couple of times for a subscription that I didn't use anymore, simply because I missed the deadline to cancel, or, you know, there was a free subscription and I subscribed thinking that I'm gonna just cancel the day before the free subscription ends, and here we are. I paid because I forgot, and I bet you probably had a very similar experience. So by tracking, you will start noticing where your money flows, and where your money flows is energy, is essentially where your energy flows, right? That's what we've explored when we discussed the first episode of the season, Price of Tomorrow, which I'll link in the description as well. Essentially, money is your energy, especially if you've earned it yourself, but even if you didn't, still, money is energy that can be sort of used into the future, right? You store your energy potential in money to spend it on something else into the future, because if you bought, instead of keeping your pounds or gold or Bitcoin, you would keep oranges, you know, they would only last you a week or two. But that's another topic, which money is better to last a long time. But the point being, for the most part, you got to have money into the future to be able to spend it into the future, right? It's a vehicle, it's a technology that we use to project our energy into the world. So first and foremost, you got to start tracking your expenses, and that's a challenge for you. Do it at least for 30 days, because that's a full month, roughly, of your expenditure. And you can sort of see, obviously, if you start tracking it every month, over time you'll see what kind of things you always spend on and what kind of things you might be impulsively buying, spending on, maybe some things that you don't need that you're spending on. But let's get that. Second law is the law of targeting. A goal that is not written is just a wish. A goal that is not written down is just a wish. Personal goal setting is the strongest force in the world, Meyer. Now, in the book, the goals are mostly related to financial goals. As we've explored in seven Habits of Highly Effective People, as well as in the episode at the end of the year about a successful setup for goal achievement, which I'll link below as well. It's very important to set up goals, to set yourself some targets, because that way you can start measuring towards them whether or not you're actually, you know, heading in the right direction. Also, when you put something on paper, there is something to it that people apparently who write their goals down are much more likely to succeed in achieving them. You know, it's not enough to just think about it. You gotta write it down. And I actually had a conversation about it with my younger brother, because recently I invited him to make some sort of intentions for the new year. And after some time passed, he told me that he has the intentions, he remembers them, but he didn't write them down. And funnily enough, I was actually reading the book at the time. So I ended up sending to him all these pages, and I'll just read basically a headings of a few of them. Just to make you aware how to set those goals up, right? So, goal must be written. Goals not written down are just wishes. Goals must be your own. It cannot be someone else's goal. You have to agree that it's yours. Goals must be positive. It's not about writing in negative tense, it's about writing in positive. And we talked about that in the episode about energy, and I'll put it below as well. I don't know if you remember, but I mentioned that apparently your subconscious mind does not recognize no. So when you say, I don't want to be fat, what your subconsciousness is hearing is, I do want to be fat, because there is no negation in your subconscious mind. There only is, okay? So when you're praying for something to happen, when you're wishing for something to happen, and when you're worrying about something to happen, you're actually doing the same thing. You're giving attention and energy for something to happen. Regardless whether you want it to happen or not, it's the same message. Goals must be measurable and specific, yet again, because that way you can track your achievement. Goals must be stated in the most visible terms available. The easier to, you know, to sort of visualize, to see, the better. Goals must contain a deadline. That's important. Do you remember the Parkinson's law, that work expands as to fill the time given for its completion? If you give yourself a deadline of 2 months, you'll achieve it in 2 months. If you give yourself a deadline of 1 week, you'll achieve it in 1 week. Of course, you know, let's be honest, it's not about, like, you cannot finish a 3-year uni course in 2 weeks, of course. But if you're giving yourself reasonable enough deadline, you're much more likely to achieve it within that deadline than if you don't give yourself that deadline, okay? That's the whole point, because you will be much more likely to procrastinate if there is no deadline. Goals must contain personality changes. It must become a part of you. You must change, not, you know, it's like with the diet. You don't become fit and healthy by being on a diet. You become fit and healthy by becoming a fit and healthy person, by acting the way a fit and healthy person would act. Of course, it might include some diet to begin with, but until that diet becomes your lifestyle, there is no lifestyle change. It's just a diet. Goals are intangible, are the intangible characteristics that make winners who they are. Goals work better if they contain benefits and rewards. You gotta, you know, hopefully come up with some sort of celebration or a carrot at the end of the tunnel. And they must be realistic and obtainable. The point here is, of course, to give yourself something that you will not feel discouraged to do. And this is why it's quite useful to start small. You know, if you want to start, and we've talked about it so many times on the podcast, like, I'm really passionate about it, as you can tell. If you want to start reading, for example, you should probably start small, right? But start small and consistent. So, for example, set yourself a goal of reading 10 pages a day. That's not much. It's probably less than 20 minutes for an average person. For a fairly quick reader, it might be even less than 10 minutes, right? So the point here is that if you measure it and make it quite realistic, quite attainable, you're much more likely to not find excuses to not do it. It's a very different story if you, give yourself a goal of reading one book per day, which is absurd, but let's say one book per week. If you're not consistent in your reading, you will just get discouraged after 1 week of missing the deadline and you'll not read again. I know, because I see this over and over with people around me, and I know myself as well, having given myself a couple of times goals that were just slightly too much, especially in habit terms, I quickly revert to the comfortable, simply because it's just too much. And if it's too much, we will get discouraged. Motivation does not last that long. And consistency, that's what we're looking for. So make yourself a favor and set up those goals, maybe in some incremental increases, rather than one full goal of, I don't know, getting £1 million by the end of the year and no steps in between. Now, the one important thing that I'd like to note here is what Peterson pointed out, and we also talked about it, that to aim is to sort of set up the terms for both success and failure. If you set up a goal that is measurable, and you aim at it and you miss, you know the conditions for failure, which is why many people choose, even though they lie to themselves that it's for other reasons, I believe that many people, and this is what Peterson said as well at some point in 12 Rules for Life, I believe, which I'll link below as well. It's a really, really good book to start with if you want to start changing your life for the better. It certainly helped me a lot a while back. I believe many people don't choose their goals because as long as those goals stay dreamy and, you know, not specified, there are no conditions to fail. And so you sort of cheat yourself to believe that you've not failed. The problem is, though, of course, if you've never tried, you've utterly failed, right? So in the same way, if you are willfully blind to your expenditures and you're not making any savings and you're actually just living paycheck to paycheck, pretending that it's not a problem, you're establishing the set of habits that will ascertain your failure. You might just live in a constant denial in that failure. And that's not what I wish for you. So it's important to remember that as you aim at a goal, you're making a courageous act and you're more likely to attain that goal than people that don't aim. But of course, remember to aim low enough that you feel motivated, high enough that you feel motivated, and low enough that you feel like it's doable for you. You have to believe it. You know, he who says he can and he who says he can't are both usually right, as Confucius said, apparently. Now, finally, prioritize. And this is a big part of the book's sort of explanation. They actually have a nice list of financial goals to think about. Maybe become debt-free, reduce financial stress, gain control of finances, own a business, reduce taxes, stuff like that, build a swimming pool. Whatever those goals are, the authors are encouraging you to write them down, maybe 5 or 6, in a priority setting. And I would encourage you to do the same with your other goals. You know, you have to have a certain priority schedule, of course, because you might find, and in life there are many trade-offs to be had. And so you gotta know what you value more, because at some point you will have to choose. And of course, if you both want a pool and a car and you only have enough money for one, you gotta choose. So you might as well choose early and set those goals in a maybe a progressive way. For example, for me, as I was writing it down, I don't exactly remember the exact wording of my goals, but there was something to, you know, first, the highest priority is to set a nest egg of investments for me and my family, to just be financially secure, right? And then the next step was whatever, buying something or stuff like that. So whatever is most important to you should come first, right? Prioritize. The third law is the law of trimming. And this is where we come back to the law of tracking. Of course, without tracking your expenses, you won't be able to trim. Now, what trimming basically relates to, let's start with the quote, is that which each of us calls our necessary expenses will always grow to equal our income unless we protest to the contrary. George Clason, funnily enough, the guy from The Richest Man in Babylon. Remember, appetite grows as you eat, right? There is a saying in Polish that means that. I don't know if it's a saying in English, actually. But what many people encounter, especially as they climb the ladder of some, you know, successful career and stuff, is that if they never actually thought about financial investments, savings, financial future, financial education, if they never thought what money is, which we sort of try to answer in these episodes as well, many of them find that as they climb the ladder and as they get more and more money, they still feel that at the end of the month, there's not enough. And of course, you know, someone standing on the side and looking might say, well, yeah, but you have so much more money than someone who's earning half your paycheck. And that person is feeling completely fine with what they're earning while you're not satiated, satisfied with yours. And of course, it's because our expenses usually expand with our income, unless we act to the contrary, right? And it's not that easy, especially if you've not started early on when the sums were small. Because also remember, if you get yourself in debt, and we've explored debt last week, so I'll also link below the Confessions of Economic Hitman, which of course was certainly, you know, relevant in that case. If you get yourself in debt, especially for big amounts, because you're earning a lot, but you at the same time don't make any investments and savings on the side, you might actually find that even though it seems like you have a lot, you don't own much. And if, touch wood, something would happen to your work, you might suddenly find yourself being bankrupt, you know, or close to defaulting on your debts, simply because you've not actually grown wealthy, you just increased the power of the hose with which you're sort of, you know, if a hose is with money, and it's imagine that the water that flows from the hydrant is obviously your income, and then as you spray it on the grass, it's your expenses. If all you do is increase the volume of both the income and expenses, you've not grown more wealthy. Wealth is what is left when you deduct from your income your expenses. And if there is nothing left, then you might, you know, by definition, be as poor as someone that doesn't have any income and any expenses. You know what I mean? So the third law of trimming is, the quote from the book says, "The key to having a surplus for your goals is to pay yourself first and then live on what's left over." And this is a big sort of change in your mindset that you have to remember. This is actually mentioned as well in The Richest Man in Babylon, and Ramit Sethi in his book I Will Teach You to Be Rich also mentions that. I don't think I've created an episode about that book yet. Maybe that's a good idea, actually. Let me write it down. So the change in your mindset here, and this actually plays a big role for your subconscious mind as well, you know, if for all of you out there who might be actually interested in these more wooey kind of vibes, cookie kind of vibes, the thing of paying yourself first sets up a precedent that whatever happens at the end of the month, if you come short with some expenses and you cannot afford that additional, you know, cup of coffee or that one more whatever, at least you know you have saved and invested. So you've given yourself into the future. And that's very, very important. And remember that time is on your side. The younger you are and the sooner you start saving and investing, the more you will earn over time, the more your money will work for you, and potentially the quicker you will be able to, for example, stop working. Because remember that other way of earning money than income is passive income. And passive income might come from starting business, you know, maybe having some entrepreneurial activities grow, or by investing your money in a way that it works and earns an interest, right? It compounds over time. And compound interest is something that we've mentioned again and again, and I'll just bring it up for your benefit. It can work both ways, right? There is a saying, a phrase, a quote, I sort of remember, I'll paraphrase it, that compound interest is those that don't understand it pay it, and those that understand it earn from it. Simple as that, I guess. So basically, compounding is getting the over time stacking more and more of an increase, let's say, of something, right? And a compound interest effect of your savings, for example, is that if you remember interest as a price of money, and if you remember that, for example, when you take a loan, you pay an interest, which essentially is the money that you owe to the bank for the money that you've taken out and given back over time. In the same way, you can earn interest if you put the money in the bank, although we did mention again and again on the podcast, and this is no financial advice whatsoever, guys, that you know, interest rates might not be to your favor in many ways. But if you put your money into something that over time accumulates more money, generates interest, and you leave that to work over time, you can get the benefit of compounding those effects, right? So let's say that for every week of me keeping the money with you, you give me £1. And so after 1 week, I have £11. After 2 weeks, I have £12. After 3 weeks, I have £13. Okay, that would be a, let's say, a fixed rate interest. But then let's say that interest is also a variable rate. We're getting slightly technical here. Let's say that it's not £1 per £10, it's 10% per whatever amount, right? So after 1 week, it's £1. After 2 weeks, it's already £1 something, and so, right? And then you get to maybe having £10,000, and 10% of £10,000 is suddenly a whole of £1,000, right? So in 1 week, you're earning £1,000 on your investment. So, of course, the compound interest in this regard plays to your advantage in a sense that if you start your month, when you get your paycheck, by paying yourself, meaning putting it aside on your savings or investing, and then spending all the other, you're allowing yourself to make sure that your savings for that month happened, instead of leaving it up until the end of the month, especially if you have a habit of spending it all. And now that you've tracked your money for some time, you probably know whether you do or not. It will be just much more difficult to save and invest. And I know, because I've been there. And I have no doubt that anyone out there who's successfully saving and investing will tell you the same. It's much more difficult to save and invest if you leave up until the last day of the month that amount to save and invest, because then you just end up saving whatever is left. And sometimes there is nothing left, and sometimes there is so little left that you might just spend it as well for spending's sake. The thing here, the trick here to talk about is, of course, our favorite instant versus delayed gratification, right? And it applies to everything. I've talked about this so many times, I don't know. Instant gratification is, of course, all that you experience right now, right? So an example in your food habits might be an instant gratification is buying sweets and eating them all now. Delayed gratification is buying something healthy, eating now, and reaping the benefits of feeling healthy later. In working out, instant gratification is, of course, the idea of not working out, because it's obviously easier just to lie down and watch the TV. But delayed gratification is working out, and then after doing the hard part, you actually feel better, and over time, you'll reap all the other benefits, such as just feeling better in general, maybe looking better, maybe having some achievements of your own in terms of sports and so forth. In the same way, remember that. And if anything, I'm quite, in this sense, you can go a bit too far with this. I think I've gone a couple of times simply because I was so fixated on the money. You can save now for your future to benefit, and that's the delayed gratification, right? That's me refraining from spending this amount of money now, so Wojtek from the future will benefit from it, or maybe my kids or my family or whatever. And to the contrary, spending it now is obviously consuming right away. So maybe spending it on something that I really want, or on whatever. Of course, the benefit of one is the instant gratification of having that spent and enjoying the benefits. And the delayed gratification, of course, is the benefit of into the future. I remember, oh, thanks, Wojtek, from the past. You've sorted me out, and now because of it, I can do something with it rather than I have to work now to be able to afford it. It sounds simple, right? It's quite a straightforward. And I'll put here one more quote. Not sure what that quote is, but I have notes here. That's about debt, actually. But that's an interesting thing and definitely related to gratification. The only thing worse than investing in things that depreciate is paying interest on money invested in things that depreciate. Blaine Harris. So, depreciation, for all of you who are not familiar with this term, I certainly wasn't until I started studying economics and finance. When something depreciates, it goes down in value, okay? So, for example, the moment you buy your car from a dealer and you drive out of the saloon, that moment, when the car stops being new and is being driven for the first time by the first driver, already depreciates the car by like 20%, basically making it less valuable by 20% because it's no longer new, right? And then as you use the car, of course, it's getting used. So over time, that usage is the depreciation of its value. And of course, a car that's driven 1,000 miles will be more valuable than a car that's driven 100,000 miles, right? Because it's just more used. And what the author here actually meant in that quote is that paying interest on things is difficult enough, right? If you're investing in something and you're getting interest, you're reaping the benefits. But if you're paying interest on something, let's say that you took a mortgage, if you're paying interest on it, of course, that will cost you additional money, right? The interest is essentially additional money that you have to give back for the benefit of using the money in the first place. But what's worse, according to the author, is paying interest on things that depreciate, because not only do you spend more over time, but you spend more over time on something that is valued, that loses value over time, right? It's a double whammy in many ways. So of course, an alternative to it is either to pay interest on things that appreciate, on assets. So liabilities are things that either depreciate or you will have to pay for, that they are a liability to you. And assets are the things that are bringing you economic benefit into the future, potentially, or that appreciate over time, right? So, for example, right now we're in quite a crazy economic times. And, if you've bought a few grams of gold a year ago or 2 years ago, you will now consider yourself more wealthy because of its appreciation in fiat terms, right? To the contrary, if you bought one of the altcoins out there, maybe some XRP or whatever. And my friend actually sent me a message saying that XRP is down by like basically back to 2017, to its price of 2017. So, if you bought that a year ago and looking at it now, you would consider it to be a liability, even though it's an asset, because it lost value in many ways. You would have to at least recognize it as a depreciated asset, right? Of course, it's not used, it just lost some value. Now, it comes back yet again to gratification. If you choose now to invest your money, to save your money, and invest in things that will appreciate over time, in the future it will be better for you. But right now, you're going to have to tighten your belt to make sure that you have money for that. Now, to the contrary, you can spend all your money right now or spend it on things that will lose value over time, and you'll get the benefit of it now, but later on you might find that you don't have enough money to cover your costs or whatever. So it's your choice, and we make those choices every day, all the time, with everything. You know, you can choose to brush your teeth every day, or you can choose not to. One is an instant gratification, one is a delayed gratification. Of course, I don't think it's that pleasant not to brush your teeth, but if you consider brushing your teeth as a chore that you don't like, then maybe instant gratification would be not to brush them. But of course, we can both imagine just how bad it would be if you don't brush your teeth over time. Now, finally, the fourth law is train. And this is, funnily enough, what we're doing right now, right? So success happens when preparation meets opportunity. Very simple. The few things that the authors point out as ways of training yourself is to educate, learn, practice, and try, right? And most importantly, do not wait. I think... And I've heard this from many financial advisors and people on the on podcasts and stuff discussing these things. And even me starting to study and understand economics, and then also other alternative economics, not Keynesian only, and finance. There is a myth that it's very, very difficult and very complicated. People... You know, we're not taught, unless you go to some special school and you've been lucky enough to have that, many of us are not taught how to manage money. We're not taught what to think about money. We're taught to make money and spend money. We're not, an average person is unlikely to be taught in a school system or whatever how to become wealthy. They are taught how to get better grades, better jobs, and so forth. But actually, financial education is a very, very lacking field. And I think for many reasons, it's for a reason. Let's not get into that. But for sure, it's one of those things that will certainly improve anyone's life if they educate themselves. And as I mentioned, the sooner you start, the better for yourself. It's much better to start thinking and learning and investing and saving when you're 20 than when you're 50, simply because you will have more time, more runway to act upon with your money that you earn and secure yourself for the future. In the very same way, someone who's old and about to go to retirement will have a very different attitude towards investing, especially in some risky ventures and assets, than someone who has another 40 years of income earning time and can allow themselves a more risky investment over that period. The thing is, though, and this applies to, for example, 5 pages reading a day, or making a habit out of going for a run every 2 days or whatever. It's essentially what I've mentioned in why you shouldn't buy Bitcoin episode and the Bitcoin Standard and Riches Man in Babylon. It's all the same, really. The thing is, these every day is working to your advantage or disadvantage, right? You're either consuming your potential or you're expanding it. If you're using your time in manner that essentially renders you more and more weak, more and more docile, more and more poor, if you're wasting your resources and your precious time, then you might be disappointed with what happens later on. And of course, yet again, this is not to go crazy and every day just focus and obsess about saving, investing, and all that. Of course, you can if you want to, but that's not the point. The point is to probably act with a bit of balance and simply apply those simple 4 rules and over time reap their benefits. Just stay consistent, right? You track your expenses, you trim them as you track them, you make a progress, you sort of target some ideas and goals, and you train yourself by educating yourself. And I think financial education is by far, apart from maybe health education in terms of personal health and potentially emotional education, I don't think there is a third most important than finance, because money applies to all aspects of our life, and it's not good or bad, it just is. And therefore, I think, and I would encourage you to really take it seriously. And to come back to my earlier point, it's not actually that complicated. Understanding how credit cards work is not actually that complicated. Understanding how your income minus your expenses equals your savings isn't that difficult. I think that's already it. You just need to start tracking it to understand it. But doing so will maybe at first feel a bit uncomfortable, but what doesn't feel uncomfortable when you do it for the first time? But then later on, you'll find that it actually empowers you. You know, I've been tracking my expenses and income for, I don't know, 4 or 5 years now. And it has certainly, like, it's a cliche, but it certainly changed my life. At least if there is one little benefit, is I know where my money went, right? I can actually tell you what I've spent my money on 2 years ago, roughly around the time of, you know, whatever. I sometimes don't track the exact date, but I certainly track the exact amount. And it allows you a clarity, and clarity brings peace. It's the unknown that we fear, right? In many ways, as we bring out of chaos the order, we minimize, or we at least make it smaller, the likelihood of making these things, making us stress over them, right? They stop being complex because we simplify them, because we understand them. And it's really not that difficult. If only you read this book and nothing else, if only you read this book and nothing else, I think you'll be well on the way of getting yourself financially prosperous. And of course, you know, all the other books that I've mentioned and I'll link below, they're definitely worth your while. I've never stopped. I really enjoy this topic. Quite frankly, I find it more interesting to learn about finance and to, you know, explore it than to work in it. Funnily enough, I think actually work in finance is fairly boring, but considering how it affects the geopolitics, how it affects our daily lives, how it affects people's choices, how it affects people's emotions and so forth, that really interests me. I find it fascinating. And it's actually not that complicated. So I would encourage you to really, 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 really educate yourself on the topic. The quote here from the book is, financial security is more about how you spend your money than how much money you earn. You might, you know, sort of have a control of where that money flows from, right? Coming back to the hose example. But even if you don't control exactly where your income and what amount of your income comes, you certainly control the aim of the hose and the intensity with which you're spraying your flowers and planting those seeds. And whether you're planting seeds or you're just spraying, you know, a party in your garden just for one day, and then for the next few months you try to make your ends meet. So, as I said, the invitation for these coming weeks, and I would encourage you to consider it a month challenge, is to put these four laws into practice, to start tracking your expenses, to set targets, at least 3, for your financial goals, and maybe other as well, maybe related, to trim the expenses that don't serve you. And this is really important, you know. If you find that you spend every day money on a takeaway coffee which you like, but it's not the essence that you have to have every day. And you can, you know, have coffee at home for a quarter of that price and put that money into something more valuable for yourself. Do it. That's the whole point. And then if you train yourself, educate yourself, put some money in some investments, actually act upon it, learn about those things, talk to people about it, maybe email me. You know, I'm no expert, but I'm happy to support you in some ideas, maybe, although I think I've given you enough to start with. Put those four laws into practice and maybe get yourself the book in the meantime to explore them again in detail, and thank me later. Really, as I said, it's no financial advice, and you know, you can do whatever you want, but yeah, I would deeply appreciate someone telling me that a while back. And of course I appreciate the time that I was told it, but since like, for example, my brother learned about it much earlier because of me, I think it would be much like, it would be a different story if I learned at his age about these things. And it's okay. It's just my part, my journey. So yeah, here it is. I actually thought the episode's going to be shorter, but hey, I enjoyed myself. As you can tell, I'm quite excited to share these ideas. Yet again, please let me know what you think about the new studio. I know it's quite minimalistic. I hope it works. I like how I can swivel in my chair without making all kinds of different noises. First and foremost, I actually have space here, so that's wonderful. Thank you so much for coming. Thank you so much for listening. I want to remind you, if you haven't already, please follow and subscribe. It helps the podcast to grow. It certainly helps you see the next episode soon enough. And yeah, good luck on your financial prosperity journey. We have a whole season ahead of us, so there might be a few activity action points still in the bag into the future, but we will also explore some geopolitics and money, some economics and money. So yeah, let's see what happens. Other than that, have a wonderful, wonderful week. Stay happy, stay healthy, and I'll see you next time.